This is the Daily Growth Discipleship Podcast. I'm Josh.
And I'm Chris.
And our featured guest this week is Gretchen Fleming. Gretchen's passion is to follow hard after Jesus, knowing He is the treasure of a lifetime and worthy of every minute she commits to Him. God's Word has been life-changing for her through the most trying times, a great source of strength, wisdom, and truth. She's a Bible teacher who speaks and writes because she loves to see Jesus change lives as He's changed hers. Gretchen is a wife of 29 years and a mother of three young adult children. And we are so excited to feature Gretchen this week on our podcast. But first, some of you might not know what a featured guest is. So Josh, what is a featured guest?
So one of the goals we have here at Daily Growth Discipleship is to learn from other people and how they've learned to walk the discipleship lifestyle out, how they've learned to grow daily. And we want to really boil down the nuggets of wisdom that they've learned. And so we've decided to break up a full conversation that we've had with them, typically an hour and a half long, into typically five chapters. We're going to release those one each day throughout the week. And that entire week will be built around the conversation that we have with our featured guest. And each chapter in that conversation then is a little nugget of wisdom, a little piece of the conversation that's really valuable insight into the discipleship lifestyle.
And so on this week's episode with Gretchen Fleming, we're releasing it in six different chapters, and you're going to want to listen to all of them. The first chapter, we start off loving the Word of God. Now, Gretchen's got an incredible story about how the Lord taught her to love His Word. And it's not something that most of us think about, but she did something very simple in order to get that result. So you're really going to want to listen and find out today. But then tomorrow, the dark night of the soul, something all Christians struggle with at some point or another. Wednesday, we're going to be talking about what she did and what it was like for her to come out of that. Chapter 4, why we need to stop measuring ourselves. For Josh and I, this is probably one of the most important chapters that we talk about because we are so guilty of measuring ourselves in so many unhealthy ways throughout our discipleship lifestyle, but also other areas of life. Chapter 5, we're going to talk about what it's like to have gratitude as a spiritual discipline. It's something that we most of the time just think about during one time of year, Thanksgiving. But how can incorporating gratitude into your spiritual disciplines change everything else in your life? In chapter 6, following hard after Jesus, what are some of the most valuable things she has learned in her discipleship journey, and how can we apply them to ours? And this episode is particularly helpful as we learn to walk the discipleship lifestyle daily. I love the little tips and tricks along the way about what it means to walk with Jesus daily. So as we talk about daily growth, I really think this episode, all six chapters, are going to be very helpful for you.
Gretchen, good to be with you. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. I'm so pleased to be here. Thanks for having me.
It's our pleasure to have you, and wanted to have you now for a while. You have a blog, GretchenFleming.com. I came to know of you through a mutual friend, and we'll go ahead and plug his app real quick. You're a writer for Devotable. You've submitted some devotions to him, so people can go and download Devotable and follow you there. But is that what you do full-time? Are you a full-time writer and speaker?
Yes, sir, I am. Mm-hmm.
How'd you get into that?
It's so much. It's just been a long process, you know, that the Lord started me on in my mid to late 20s. I was a young stay-at-home mom, and He called me to be a Bible teacher. And at the time, I had three kids under four, and I just thought, wow, you know. Seems like you've called me late, you know. I wasn't able to go to seminary, and it just didn't seem like the right season. But, you know, He just said, you're to be a Bible teacher, take time to prepare. So I started way back then spending loads of time with Him, whether it was getting up before the kids got up or if they were happy and amused, I would run back to my green chair and spend some time with the Lord and just... That was about 26 years ago now, and I've just grown in the Lord and my knowledge of his word since then. And I used to just facilitate Bible studies, and then I did book studies, and then I began to write my own Bible studies and teach them. And interspersed with all of that, I would be asked to speak at different women's events. And so it was just sort of a natural transition that as I was being changed from being in God's word, my natural inclination is to want to share it with other people. And so I'm mainly a Bible teacher, but I exercise that through speaking and writing.
Did you grow up as a Christian, or were you saved later in life?
I have the blessing of a rich legacy with the Christian faith. My grandparents were Christians. My parents are believers. And I grew up in a small town in Kentucky in a little Southern Baptist church. And as I moved to Florida to actually date my husband, we were in a Southern Baptist church and just began to grow in my relationship with the Lord. And through taking Bible studies that they offered, like Henry Blackaby's Experiencing God or mm-hmm. Beth Moore or Anne Graham Lotz, you know, way back in the day. I mean, I just could not get enough of Bible study and also Bible study fellowship. And so it was such a big difference to me between Sunday school, which was what I was used to then in my 20s, Bible studies came on the scene, and they were offered in churches. And I found that in Sunday school, people just showed up because it was what you were supposed to do. But Bible studies, people showed up because they wanted to. Mm-hmm. And to sit and have conversations about God's word, and then to just sort of wrestle through it together, I began to grow and change. And I just thought, man, you know, if I grew up in the church and I didn't know about this, who else doesn't know, mm-hmm. you know, what we can have with the Lord through that love relationship and what it, the purpose of studying God's word. It isn't just something to check off the list of dues to be a Christian. It's an opportunity to grow in intimacy through knowledge and then how that affects our heart toward the Lord. So it was just a natural tendency to want to share what I was going through and gaining because it was too good to keep to myself.
That's great. That really, really resonates with me, especially the what you experienced in doing it with other people, because it's really easy to kind of lock yourself in and read the Bible on your own and work through those things on your own. And God can do great stuff in those times, but I'm the same way. I've found a lot of growth when in studying the Bible with other people, having conversations with other people. The Holy Spirit just does some great stuff in those situations.
Yeah. And so, you mentioned a point that I think was really great is it seems like a lot of people in the churches don't know that this form of study, this form of growth, Christian fellowship is available. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think part of it is the time you're born in and where you're born and the churches, you know, and the denomination you're in. Being in a small town and, you know, Southern Baptist, it seemed like that what was emphasized is evangelism, which is wonderful. And, you know, I definitely wholeheartedly agree with that as an emphasis. And then serving the Lord. But really loving the Lord or being very transparent, accountability. There's just a lot of different subject matter that wasn't really taught from the pulpit mm-hmm. and wasn't really addressed in our Sunday school curriculum. So mm-hmm. I think when Henry Blackaby came upon the scene, and he was part of the Southern Baptist Convention, I think, man, he really enabled believers to know of what God wanted of them more than their service. He was out for that love relationship with them. Mm-hmm. And I can still remember, I got a glimpse of what I could have. Blackaby was explaining something about his own quiet time. And he said, You know, I'll read in different parts of the word at any given time, but at the same time, I am always in the Gospels because that's where my Jesus is. And when he said that, his voice broke. And I had never heard or seen a passion for the Lord like that. And when I saw that, I thought, uh-oh, I said, you know, I thought to myself, there is something more to this. It isn't about just working your butt off for the Lord. It isn't about just telling others about Jesus. It is about a personal transaction. It's an intimacy that's available. And once I knew that that was possible, that's what I wanted.
You know, speaking of Henry Blackaby, I've found it's, you don't always have to know these people personally to sort of be mentored by them. Sometimes you can just be, you can find a mentor from people who have been gone hundreds of years through their writings or from afar. But are there any other particular mentors that have helped you along in the faith similarly?
Well, I can remember when I first started growing and I still had young children, we lived out in the country. And so I would put on a certain radio station in Tallahassee, Florida, that had a lot of preachers on it. And Charles Stanley was one of them, John MacArthur. And so I would listen to them, you know, going to and from town. And so I grew a lot in just all the sermons I heard from Bible studies. You know, Beth Moore and Ann Graham Lotz were two of my favorites. And then, you know, as you speak about older people that are just dead and gone, you know, Brother Lawrence's book, I love a lot of the classic scholars. So, you know, Brother Lawrence, I gained a lot from him. Hannah Whittle Smith, Andrew Murray, you know, just I had a voracious appetite for reading when I first began to learn what was available to me. And I think I liked older authors and classics more than contemporaries a lot of times. I just love how God has been eternal and what he did in someone's life, you know, 500 years ago is still so very relevant to me today. And it can explain so much of what I'm going through, you know, even thick terms like, you know, the dark night of the soul. I can remember when I was, I think it was like year 2000, I was going through a real struggle and seemed very confused by it. And then I remember reading about it in My Utmost for His Highest. And one of my favorite devotionals is Streams in the Desert. And just, you know, certain older classics bring to light what's still going on today. And it is a rich resource.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Do you mind if I ask you to elaborate a little bit on that dark spot? That is one of the questions we like to ask people is, you know, how we deal with or how they've dealt with certain difficult spots, because we think at least the church doesn't do a good enough job sort of expressing those stories and really talking about what they are. And I love that you brought up the dark night of the soul, because that is one of the best sort of images of what it is to go through these dark periods of internal suffering and striving. But when we come through them, that's when we often experience, we looking back, we can tell that we've experienced the most growth, or that Jesus was walking with us closer than he's ever walked with us before.
And I've been through one personally here in the last 6 years. Started, yeah, probably 6 years ago. And I think one of the things that would really, really help Christians is if they could learn to, they could learn that these dark nights of the soul are fairly common for Christians, but it doesn't seem like that's the message that we hear from the pulpits nowadays. Mm-hmm. And so, what was it like for you going through that? And, How did you maintain a passion for Christ going through that or coming out of it?
I didn't learn about the terminology of it until towards the end of my time. So I sort of muddled my way through it for, it seems like, much of the time. Mm-hmm. But the way I would describe it, I think there's two different ways we experience hard trials. You know, sometimes it deals with discipline and sin, but what was a marked difference in sort of the dark night of the soul kind of experience is that it did not have to deal with sin. It dealt with pruning. Because in my nature, I'm a perfectionist, and I'm really trying to get away from that. I call myself a recovering perfectionist, but I'm going to stop even saying that, because just a couple of days ago, the Lord, I learned something that, you know, only God is perfect, and I really feel like perfectionism is idolatry, and I'm like, man, I really have to distance myself from, you know, those tendencies. But anyway, so as a perfectionist, you know, I'm all about trying hard. And, you know, a perfectionist will gloss over and ignore the 99 things that are right, and they hone in on what's wrong. And they can exhaust themselves trying to fix it. So when I started going through my dark night of the soul, at first I began to just self-examine a lot. And I tend to normally self-examine anyway. And I think that is probably what motivates a lot of my writing on my website, is that, you know, I am asking myself questions and wanting to learn and understand from the Lord what's going on, or what do I need to do differently, or what do I need to perceive differently. So I had that habit about myself anyway. So as I began to examine and think, what have I done wrong? Why am I not feeling close with the Lord? I could not come up with anything. I mean, there was no unrepentant sin. And so I just sort of dug deep. I tried to be more devoted. And it was like God was a million miles away. I did not feel close to him. I just felt like he was very silent. I know my utmost for his highest talks a lot about the darkness. And that word, darkness, and silence from God, those described the dark night of the soul. Is you don't feel close, you can't figure out what's wrong, you're trying hard to remedy it, you long to be close again. But I think someone who's going through a dark night of the soul is someone that's already tasted of the intimacy with Christ. Mm. So then when you sort of remove that intimacy, It's very disconcerting. It's painful. It's you know, you don't like it at all. You can almost become a little frantic about it, trying to figure out what is wrong. And then you mix in just sort of the conditional love we're used to on this earth, and you begin to think there's surely some way I have displeased the Lord, and it's some kind of punishment. Mm-hmm. But that's the thing about the dark night of the soul, you know. You just have to persevere. And I can remember thinking and praying to the Lord, you know, I don't know where you are, and I don't know where I am. I can't even judge if I'm in the right, if I'm in the wrong. And I would just pray, you're going to have to come find me, because I don't know where I am anymore. And usually that time period is not a quick period. My season lasted about a year and a half, and it usually deals with just more than one area of your life. Like, I can remember thinking, if someone looked at my life on paper, there was no reason for me to be feeling the way I felt. Everything was pretty much going okay, but yet I was miserable on the inside because I did not feel close to God. I did not see any spiritual growth in me, and that's another frustrating part, because mm-hmm. I knew it had to be some kind of work of the Lord, but I saw no fruit. And then that was discouraging, because as a perfectionist, what do you do a lot? You're measuring.
Yeah, you got to have the fruit.
I persevere through a lot if I feel like I'm progressing. And I can remember getting towards the end of it and looking back as I came out of it, and in hindsight, I could see great gain. There was much fruit, much righteousness that came from that time period. But during the time, it was a time of feeling confused and distant from the Lord.
And there's a lot of stuff that I really want to dive into there. Do you remember when the fog started to lift? And if so, what was sort of the moments that you had going through there where you started to see some of the light and you were like, okay, well, I think maybe things are starting to get better, or you maybe rekindled that intimacy?
Yeah, towards the end of the time, I actually found some authors that talked about, the dark night of the soul. And another author I think I gained some insight from, if I'm remembering her name right, Catherine Marshall. And I think she termed it a stripping.
Yep.
And I would agree with that. Basically, I felt like it was God emptied me of myself. It's a very humiliating time, because it's almost like he pulls his hand back and you see how fruitless you are apart from his spirit. Mm-hmm. That it is only from God, through God, and to God that anything of worth happens in your life. And you can be working yourself to death and you're not going to see any good from it unless his spirit is involved. And so the way I knew I was coming out of it, I began to start feeling more of a connection with the Lord. And I can remember reading a devotion towards the end of January in Streams in the Desert. And it talked about, basically God calling his people out and telling them to go and take possession of the land, that he was, that it was time for them to enter in. And it was when I read that, I recognized through the Spirit that I think this is coming to a close, that I am getting back to, I won't say normal, because I don't think you're ever the same after having gone through it.
Yeah, I agree.
And I learned, the more I squirmed, I sort of knew the more I fight this, I bet the longer this is going to take me. I'm so goal-oriented that, I'm trying to figure it out, and I can just remember thinking, I've got to be still. I just need to let him have his way and be still. And that became my game plan just daily, that let him do what he was going to do and trust him to do it.
Mm-hmm.
As I came out, I was so glad to start feeling those feelings of intimacy back with the Lord, and feeling the joy and the closeness and just the fellowship, and I was different. And I think you can have it more than once. I'm actually reading a book right now called Emotionally Healthy Spirituality.
It's a great book. Yeah.
Oh, my word, isn't it? And I'll tell you, he has a wonderful section about this. He calls it the wall. Mm-hmm. And boy, don't I wish I'd have had that, 18 years ago when I was going through my time. But he brings up a good point, because he thinks you can go through it more than once. And when I read that recently, I agreed, because I went through sort of a season. It was somewhat tied to circumstances. Back in 2013, we had some two issues going on with two out of our three kids. But it was another sort of time of stripping for me, that even though I wanted to make that season about what my children were doing or what they weren't doing, God really came to me and just, placed in my mind the thought, Gretchen, if I fix them first, you won't change. Mm-hmm. And I was like, huh, because what they were doing was obviously in the wrong. So it just seemed so confusing to me that they weren't the issue. And he's like, no, if I change them first, then you won't change. So he wanted me to get to a place to where I was not as controlling. I had greater faith. I had appropriate expectations. I had not, in the past, I had let my ideals become my expectations, and they were totally unrealistic. So he really needed to do a work in me before he worked in my children. And so I feel like that was almost another time of a dark night in the soul, because it lasted for a couple of years and was just excruciating to go through. But boy, it has brought about such freedom in my life, that second go around with suffering, that I will say, as painful as that was going through that experience with two of my children, it was worth it, because I am not who I was, and I have never experienced the level of freedom and peace that I get to enjoy now as a norm in my life.
Yeah, I really like what you said about squirming, making it last longer. Well, that was exactly what I was going through as well. I mean, I'm kind of like you. I guess a recovering perfectionist might be what you would describe. Again, I'm not really good on using that title like you are, but I really want to perform and measure myself by how I perform. And so for me, it was, all right, I know this has got to be some kind of lesson that you want to teach me, Lord, but what is it so I can learn it and be done with it? And so the entire time was him basically telling me, that's not the point. It's more about you realizing that you can't do this and letting me do it.
Right. And it really reminded me of that psalm, you know, be still and know that I am God. Mm-hmm. And I can remember looking up years ago what those words mean. And the first part means to cease striving. And I am such a striver. I am goal-oriented, performance-based. And so he has had his hands busy with me through the last, you know, 25 years, going on 30 years probably, trying to undo my natural bent toward, you know, performance-based relationships, you know, that I have to please him and please others. And, mm-hmm. you know, so that's one of the blessings as you, you know, I'm 51 now, and that's one of the blessings as you start getting older. God connects the dots, and you begin to realize what about you is not of God and only hurts you, and you begin to recognize it and let go of it.
Mm-hmm. So that's a good way into a blog post I wanted to talk to you about in particular, which you had titled Why You Should Stop Measuring. Or why I need to stop measuring. And it spoke to me for the same reasons that we're talking about here, is we seem to, and maybe this is really where I want to dive in and have a conversation, because I still do believe there is a place for measuring. And so I want to get your thoughts and feedback on this. Even for the spiritual disciplines, I think there's a place for measuring. I think we often don't measure the right things. In other words, and like you hit on it in your blog here, a lot of times what we're trying to measure is whether we personally are enough. So tell us a little bit about this blog post, Why You Need to Stop Measuring. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think I sort of categorize it two different ways. You know, measuring is, I think, when I'm doing it in my flesh, and examining is when I am allowing the Spirit to guide me, sort of in the disciplines. And, you know, when God convicts me through, you know, as I'm examining and he's bringing about conviction, have you ever noticed there's no shame or a negative feeling that really comes from God's conviction? Like, I don't bristle at God's conviction, but buddy, I feel shame and discouragement when I am measuring myself. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a never enough mentality. Mm-hmm. And so I just recognize, because I'm a recovering perfectionist and I tend to measure myself a lot, and you know, am I obedient enough? Am I loving people enough? Am I being a good Christian enough? You know, am I praising God enough? Am I wise enough? Am I humble? I mean, it's just never ending. Mm-hmm. And I think when you're involved with, when your faith matters to you, and then you're involved with ministry, you just take it very seriously. Mm-hmm. So I found that as I measured, two things happened. I was prone to feel discouragement as I measured myself, and I was prone to feel resentment as I measured others.
Mm-hmm.
both of those lead to bondage.
Mm-hmm.
And so I feel like that there's a difference that when I am walking in the Spirit, that I am able to examine myself. And like recently learning how if God is the only one that's perfect, then why in the past and even sometimes still today, why do I try to be so perfect? Why am I struggling with perfectionism? And I just began to realize how, you know, what an idol that is, that that's idolatry.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I like that you just said that because I think that's so true. It's idolatry. We set ourselves up as our own gods.
Yes. And when I came upon that realization on Sunday, you know, through the Spirit, I didn't feel shame from that.
Mm-hmm.
It was a good thing. Like, it, God knows I long to understand, but he's got to connect the dots for me. And that I'll just be, you know, going along oblivious to what I'm doing. And he has to show me, you know, who I am and why I am the way I am and how it differs from his perspective.
Yeah.
So when he brings conviction or truth like that, you know, it doesn't make me feel bad. It makes me feel good because mm-hmm. that's where freedom is.
Mm-hmm. And it's actually inspiring. You recognize that grace that he's giving you sort of, you know, because of that shortcoming and it... I find it's just hugely motivating and inspiring to want to become better for the right reasons. I was reading a book one time, and this guy was talking about how there's like he was using guitar players as an example, and he said like there's two different types of guitar players who are better than you, and he says there's the one kind that he plays, and you just feel terrible. You're just like, I'm never picking up another guitar again. I'll never be as good as that guy. And then you can listen to other people who are far better, by the way, you know, some of the classics, and they just make you want, they just inspire you somehow. And he says, it's usually just, it's in the spirit of it, right? And it's almost something intangible, but I think that's what you're getting at here when you're talking about when the Spirit convicts you, it's this non-condemning spirit that comes from it.
Right. Because perfect love casts out fear. It basically comes down to it's either of God or it's of the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I am feeling discouragement and resentment, that is because I am not walking in the Spirit and I am cooperating with the scheme of the enemy. I am measuring myself. I'm measuring others. You know, other people are not meeting my expectations. And so I'm getting my feelings hurt or feeling their, I'm either hearing their accusations, I'm feeling their condemnation or their shame. And then that just makes me get resentful and bitter. And so I think it's important for us that we need to understand our weaknesses because the devil sure knows them.
Yep.
And as Christians, we can just be blindly going along, cooperating with his schemes without realizing it. And so it behooves us to understand ourselves and to see where our weak areas. And for me, it's, you know, the discouragement when I don't feel like I'm measuring up. And it's the resentment when I don't feel like others are not measuring up to my expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. With that understanding, how do spiritual disciplines help us grow through opportunities like this?
Well, I came upon a practice really by accident that has been a profound influence in helping me gain ground in these areas and in perfectionism specifically, because you know, a perfectionist, I would say I'm an optimist as I look at other people, but as I look at myself, the cup isn't even half empty. It's mostly empty, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I would tend to enter into the Lord's presence with prayer time, and I would start my prayer time like this. Oh, Lord, like just disgusted with myself. Like, why am I not doing better? Why am I not more patient with the kids or loving toward my husband or whatever? It's just a million things. And so I can remember a few years ago, I read Ann Voskamp's book, 1,000 Gifts. And so she talked about a gratitude journal. So I began to use a gratitude journal, and I use it first thing when I wake up in the morning. I go get my coffee, and as I'm drinking that first cup of coffee, I get my journal out, And I just number it. I keep a year's numbers for 1 year, and then January 1st, I start the next year with number one again. And so each day, I don't sit down to write a certain amount. I just think back to the previous day on what God has already done that was good and right, whatever was excellent or praiseworthy, sort of like that Philippians 4 passage. Mm-hmm. So I start my gratitude journal, and I just do bullet points, you know, 1,132, the less humid day yesterday, 1,133, Kyle's kind text to me, and I just think back to the previous day, what were my gifts, what were blessings? And so that ended up changing actually my prayer time, because instead of focusing on what was wrong with me or our family or with life in general, I began to enter the Lord's presence with thanksgiving, because God used that gratitude journal to change me from the inside out on my perspective. I began to hone in and focus on what was good and right, not what was wrong. So I began to see the more I praised and worshiped the Lord, and the more I was more mindful of what he had done, then the less I needed to feel bad about measuring myself, or the less I felt bad on how others did not meet my expectations, because I was focusing on the people that were exceeding my expectations and who God did have in my life that loved me and supported me and the things that he had given me to do that he was blessing. So does that make sense?
Yeah, that's great, because especially when God pairs that with a dark night of the soul where he does that stripping away and kind of leaves you humbled in his presence, you couple that with gratitude and thanksgiving, and I think that's where the Spirit's sweet spot is in our lives, where he wants us to be.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And I think, back to my point about measuring, actually, you beat me to it, but I think journaling is one of the best forms of actually measuring our spiritual lives. For the reasons that you gave, right, is it's not a look towards ourselves, it's not us condemning ourselves, but it's a record. It becomes a record of what the Lord has done in our lives. And so we get to look back over that and see, oh, I was struggling with this at that time, or I was thankful for this at that time because, I had just come through, this season, or, God had really, his providence was at work in this area of my life. And so I think it's a great way of measuring ourselves without, us being the ones that are doing the measuring.
Because it's for the purpose of Thanksgiving. Good point.
Are we measuring ourselves, or are we measuring God?
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you think back into the Word, what does he say a lot in the Old Testament? He keeps coming to the Israelites saying, remember,
mm-hmm.
remember. And what, how did they keep messing up? They kept forgetting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we, in our flesh, our tendency is to forget what God has done and hone in on what he has yet to do. And I can remember when our oldest was in eighth grade, our kids came through a private Christian school in Tallahassee. And our oldest has a learning disability. And so it was always difficult for him to make it through that school because it was an honors-based curriculum. And when they got to high school, we knew we were going to switch them over to the public school to just let them have a little dose of the real world before they left our home to go to college. And so that eighth grade year, as our son was struggling, I was wringing my hands and I was worrying. I was like, Lord, how is he ever going to make it through high school? We don't know anybody in that public school. They're not Christians over there. They're not going to love him. How is he ever going to make it through? And I just fretted, and the Lord just stopped me in my tracks, and he just imparted in my mind these thoughts. Gretchen, why do you worry over what I will or will not do tomorrow instead of thanking me for what I've already done for Bryce?
Mm-hmm.
Has he not made it through all of these years without even an F or a D?
Mm-hmm.
Has he not made it? Have I not supported him and he has done just fine? Was it easy? No, but he had made it through. Why don't you spend more time thanking me for what I've already done, worrying about what I may or may not do in the future? Then fast forward to Bryce's senior year, and our kids are close in age. So his senior year, his younger sister was a junior and his younger brother was a freshman. So they were all three in high school together. And his senior year, there was one semester where Bryce was on the honor roll, but the other two weren't. And when I got that paper home, when Bryce handed me that, don't you know that the Lord immediately brought back to mind that eighth grade year with me wringing my hands, mm-hmm. worrying, because worry is a wasted emotion. It is feeling bad over what hasn't happened. Mm-hmm. And God knew how Bryce was going to do in high school. I just didn't know it. But it really showed up in my unbelief. It revealed, worry revealed my unbelief and my lack of trust in God.
Yep. Yep.
That'll preach right there. Sort of pivoting just sort of towards the end of the interview here. I should have asked this question first, but actually I think it's better saved for last now. Your blog is centered around the theme of following hard after God. Can you tell us what you mean by that, following hard? And then what are some ways in which we can practice that?
Yes, it's based on Psalm 63. I love David. He and Joseph are my two favorite people in the Old Testament. And what I love about David, so, is his devotion, his passion. And Psalm 63 is, the time period that's happened, he was on the run from his son Absalom, how he'd gotten kicked out of the kingdom. He's in the middle of a desert. And so he's on the run. He's lost his kingdom. But this is what he says. Oh, God, you are my God. Earnestly I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My body longs for you in a dry and weary land where there is no water. So the fact that when he's on the run and in a desert, yet what is he thirsting for? He's thirsting for his God. That's what's on his mind. And then you go down that following hard is based on verse 8. And for some reason, I've always liked it in the King James Version. And it says, my soul follows hard after thee. And that really describes David to me. His goal was not about the kingdom or about anything else. It was about God himself. And so I love the way David was wholly devoted to God, that he was a man after God's own heart. Was he perfect? No. But he was a humble man, and he was honed in on what was most important to him, and it was God himself. God was his great reward. And so following hard means wrestling through the hard stuff. It means, you know, being wholly devoted to God himself, not the ministry he's given me, not the family he's given me, not the roles that he's given me in life, not about myself, but about God, that he is my passion. And so that's what following hard means. It's following hard for all that he is, because he's just more than I could ever hope for. He's the treasure of my lifetime. So why wouldn't I want to devote myself to knowing him better, loving him deeper, and then making him known to others?
That's so good. The actual last question we like to ask everyone on the podcast has to do with the most valuable thing that you've learned as a Christian. Because we find most people, and we've already touched on this, so it might overlap a little bit, and that's okay, have gone through or had certain moments happen to them throughout their walk where once they encounter that moment with Jesus, or once something is made clear to them, it sort of flips a switch and it changes them, and they're never the same after that. And sometimes it's very simple things or really big things that add profound impact in their life. So if you had to narrow it down to what's the most valuable thing that you've learned as a Christian, what would that be?
That God can be your passion. You know, he was not my passion. And in my 20s, I heard Beth Moore say that she heard it from someone else, that you can ask God to become your passion. And, you know, I guess the first part of that is knowing that he could be your passion. And then I began to pray, God, give me a passion for you and your word, because I read his word out of duty, but I didn't really enjoy it. So in my mid to late 20s, I began to pray, God, give me a passion for you and your word. And I prayed it over and over and over. And I can remember just one day thinking to myself, because the kids got occupied with something, I thought, I'm going to run back to my chair and have some time with him. And then I thought to myself, well, wait a minute, I had my quiet time. And then the next thought was, I want to have it again. And then the next thought was, oh, my word, he has answered my prayer, because I wanted to go read the Bible with him and just spend time with him. And so God becoming the passion of my life, he is the goal. That's the greatest thing I ever learned. It changed my life. And that's another verse that reminds me of David. I think it's Psalm 16:8. It says, I have set the Lord always before me. Because he is at my right hand, I will not be shaken. Mm-hmm. And I think David examples that so well. He kept putting the Lord in front of him. And basically what that means is he sought the Lord. Mm-hmm. He inquired of him. And that just makes a huge difference in our lives.
Yeah. And if we seek him, we will find him. That's right. Well, Gretchen, where can people go to find out more about you and follow what you're doing?
They can go to GretchenFleming.com. That's GretchenFleming.com. And if they are in need of a retreat or conference speaker, I would love to come be their speaker. So I would just love to have them follow me. And my social media links are on my website.
Great.
Awesome.
And we will have everything linked in the show notes below, all the books that we've mentioned, as well as links to Gretchen's website and her social media accounts, so you can be sure to go there and follow her. Gretchen, thank you so much for being with us today and sharing your life and your wisdom with us. It's been a real pleasure.
Oh, it was my honor to do so. Thanks, guys, for inviting me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Daily Growth Discipleship Podcast. If you liked what you've heard here, be sure to share it with someone else, and then go subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify.